Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 17 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 24th of April 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Alison and Andrew. And in the news this week, the council charges for landlords are imminent. Anyone fancy counting butterflies? And 350 odd miles of Norfolk roads are getting their annual pothole treatments. All this plus Grapevine Extra with Alison on St George and Andrew on ghosts. Well, no birthdays again this week, so it's straight over to Alison and Andrew for the first part of the news.
Hello everybody and welcome to Grapevine on a lovely sunny afternoon. Alison and Andrew here with you, and Alison is going to start the news.
Hello everyone. A beekeeping scheme is growing across the region. Project APIS CIC, a Great Yarmouth-based community interest company, now runs six community apiaries across the area, offering free weekly beekeeping sessions for up to 10 people at each site. Originally starting with two pilot sites in Galston last year, Project APIS has since expanded to include apiaries in Bradwell, Ludham, Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft, with each location providing hands-on learning opportunities in beekeeping and pollinator care. Jamie McBride, founder of Project APIS CIC, said, "One of the biggest things for us now is making sure people know we are here. We want local people to know there are opportunities to get involved, and we also want to hear from schools, churches, community organisations and businesses that may want to work with us. Our goal is to keep growing in a way that benefits both people and pollinators. The organisation is keen to hear from groups and individuals who are interested in taking part or collaborating on new projects. As well as running existing sites, Project APIS is looking to expand by developing additional community apiaries in partnership with schools, churches and other organisations." Mr. McBride said, "These projects are not just about bees. They're about education, well-being, community involvement and helping local spaces become more nature-friendly. We would love to hear from anyone who wants to attend, support us or explore what we could create together in the community or organisation." In addition to its beekeeping sessions, Project APIS is exploring options for sponsorship and bumblebee installation projects. This gives businesses and organisations a practical way to support biodiversity and visible community impact. Anyone interested in taking part, partnering with the CIC, or hosting a beekeeping site is encouraged to contact Project APIS through its website or social media channels.
And a new buzz shelter is being installed and a footpath extended in a Broads village. I meant bus shelter, really. The work is taking place on the south side of the A1064 in Flegborough and began on Monday. Half of the road will be closed and temporary traffic lights will be in operation, but the entrance to the village hall will remain open at all times. A spokesman for Flegborough Parish Council said the work should be completed by the end of this week. The village is served by the number 7 bus service operated by First Bus. As part of the project, the Parish Council will be disposing of the old wooden bus shelter. Parish Clerk Paul Johnson said, "If you know anybody who is interested in acquiring the old wooden bus shelter, please ask them to contact me. This would be preferable to sending it to landfill. It'd look nice in the back garden, wouldn't it? If you'd like to acquire the shelter, please contact the Parish Clerk on 07502 735991.
And now to butterflies. The spectacular sight of thousands of butterflies arriving across the North Norfolk coast last summer seemed to signal a revival in fortunes for this endangered creature. While numbers soared after a terrible 2024, a survey has revealed that many species face an uphill struggle for survival in the county. Volunteers in Norfolk walked more than 2,500 kilometres for the National UK Butterfly Monitoring Scheme, known as JKBMS, last year, and counted a total of 85,071 butterflies, a huge increase on the 40,698 counted in 2024 and 53,595 in 2023. Common blue numbers rose by 173% in 2025 compared to the year before, while the migratory clouded yellow was recorded at 16 sites, up from just one, according to the Norfolk branch of National Charity Butterfly Conservation. One of the most spectacular examples of butterflies thriving in last year's warm weather was the arrival of a large number of small whites and large whites from over the North Sea. Several people in June reported thousands coming in across the North Norfolk coast. Small tortoiseshell numbers also improved, but were still very low for what was previously considered a common butterfly. Small blue, which has been recorded in small numbers at Cranwich Camp since 2022, also added to the good news picture. The count soared to 65 in the latest JKBMS survey. The UK subspecies of swallowtail, which is only found in the Norfolk Broads, had a strong year, with JKBMS count of 166 compared to 88 the previous summer. Other Norfolk priority species, white admiral, small heath, grayling and wall, also showed positive progress. Dingy and grizzled skipper numbers remain steady, but their future in Norfolk remains fragile. The Butterfly Conservation Norfolk branch had stressed that many local successes have only happened because of years of dedicated conservation work, much of it reliant on volunteers. Branch spokesman Malcolm Fisher said, "Butterflies are so valuable to us in so many ways. For many, they are a way to feel a connection to the natural world, but for ecologists, they are also an invaluable indicator of the health of the whole environment. As pollinators, they provide an essential ecosystem service. At the Norfolk branch, we are always on the lookout for more volunteers to help with surveys to provide data that enables us to continue to monitor the health of butterfly populations. We provide training, so you don't need to be an expert. You just have to come and care about our natural world." The data from the National UK Butterfly Monitoring Scheme, run by the charity, which this week revealed the national results from the 50th year of its operation. Despite celebrating an incredible 44 million butterfly records collected by 782,000 volunteers since 1976, the results show that more than half of the UK's native species are in decline, many of them specialities whose habitat is disappearing. The warmest and sunniest year ever recorded in the UK in 2025 provided perfect conditions for butterflies, and most performed better than in 2024, but no species recorded its best year. Now, Butterfly Conservation is warning that after decades of habitat loss, pollution and other threats, perfect weather will not be enough to allow butterflies to recover to historic levels without targeted conservation. Alan Dawson, who has served as the charity's Norfolk Transect Coordinator for 13 years, said, "One thing that 2025 has taught us is how butterflies can bounce back from adversity given a hot summer. It would be nice to think that the high numbers seen in 2025 are the start of a major revival, but that, of course, depends on a lot of factors. Unfortunately, we are aware many of Norfolk's species are still at risk from a volatile climate and loss of habitat."
Staying with an ecological theme, and electrical waste collections are partly resuming at Norfolk recycling centres after a major fire forced a temporary halt on the service. From today, April the 23rd, people were able to recycle a limited range of large electrical items at Norfolk County Council's 19 tips. The authority had to bring in a temporary ban on such items following disruption caused by a significant fire at Wiser Recycling in Thetford. The depot in Brunel Way was where the council's contractors took electrical items such as fridges, freezers, televisions and dishwashers, which were left at recycling centres, to be processed. But when a fire attended by almost 30 fire crew, ripped through the buildings just after 7 p.m. last Thursday, it was left out of action. The council said its tips could not accept electrical items as a result, while district council-run bulky waste collections were also affected. However, contingency arrangements means recycling centres were able to accept these large electrical items from Thursday, as already mentioned. However, the tips will still not be able to accept smaller items, including laptops, mobile phones, batteries, light bulbs, and any other small electrical and battery-powered items. Council said that this was because these items require pre-sorting before onward transport, and there is currently no safe treatment capacity available for this process. A spokesman said Norfolk County Council is continuing to work closely with its contractor to restore full electrical waste services as quickly as possible. A further update will be provided once arrangements are in place to safely manage all types of waste electrical items. In the meantime, residents are reminded never to place electrical items or batteries in household waste bins, as this presents a serious fire risk. Residents are asked to store these items safely at home until services are fully restored. The disruption may also continue to affect some district council bulky waste collections that include electrical items and curbside collections of small electricals and batteries. People are urged to check with their district council whether their services are affected. The blaze came at a time when the county council had already been forced to stop accepting fridges and freezers at its recycling centres. We reported this last week, and this was because of a fire at a West Midlands business which dealt with those, coupled with a Welsh company which went into administration, leaving the council struggling to find somewhere to process them.
People in Norfolk will be treated to seeing a military formation fly over the county as part of the King's birthday celebrations. The event will take place on June the 13th and feature a number of military aircraft. A large formation will gather over the North Sea off the coast of Great Yarmouth before heading inland. They will then funnel inwards towards South Norfolk, where they will be visible to those in Loddon, Hopton and Tasborough. From here, the aircraft will continue to head south towards London, where they will conduct a flypast at Buckingham Palace, having headed over Suffolk and Essex on the way. Although the full lineup has yet to be confirmed, last year's formation featured the Red Arrows, Typhoons and F-35B Lightning Jets, all crowd favourites at the annual spectacle. The King's birthday is not his actual date of birth, but rather a yearly celebration.
Landlords are being urged to register under a new scheme as part of a drive to raise housing standards. Great Yarmouth Borough Council launched a new selective licensing scheme last year to regulate privately rented homes, which covers about 5,000 homes across parts of the borough. Landlords have until the 30th of June to apply and complete the necessary paperwork to comply. A council spokesman said, "Over the past few months, we've been meeting with landlords and agents and have hosted a number of successful drop-in and online sessions to help explain what people need to do to make sure they comply with the new scheme. We have already received more than 350 applications and things are bedding in well, but we want to do all we can to make sure people have all the information they need to successfully obtain a licence. More onboarding events are planned, and we have teams on hand to help landlords and agents understand what they need to do. Fortunately, it is not an onerous process." The scheme applies to the Nelson, Central, Northgate, Southtown and Cobham wards, as well as 8 streets in the Yarmouth North ward. It aims to improve property conditions by requiring landlords to meet minimum standards and maintain homes appropriately under a 5-year licensing framework. Participating properties will be subject to inspections to ensure compliance with health, safety and licensing conditions. Landlords must pay a £694 licensing fee, which was lowered from the initially proposed £784. The council has emphasised that the scheme is not designed to generate profit, and research suggests such schemes elsewhere have not driven up rental prices.
A Grade 2 listed mill on the Norfolk Broads has been named one of the quirkiest properties currently on the market. The home, which is being marketed by Waterside estate agents for £495,000, was included in Rightmove's roundup of the most gloriously unusual listings. It sits in Martham and boasts over four floors, three bedrooms, a living room, a new kitchen and a bathroom. A spokesman for Waterside said it is believed to have been built in 1908. It was converted into a holiday let in the 1950s to 60s, and it has remained one ever since. The current owners have looked after it well and replaced the mill cap in 2021. The agency spokesman said the mill enjoys a peaceful and private lawned garden, well enclosed by mature trees and hedging. Directly in front of the mill, separated by a footpath, is the private mooring plot. The plot is the perfect vantage point to sit and enjoy far-reaching, unspoilt views, as well as the wealth of bird life and wildlife.
A comedian who sold out the O2 Arena and is a triple BAFTA award winner is coming to Norwich on his latest tour. Mo Gilligan is bringing his new show, The Mo You Know, to Norwich Theatre Royal on February the 12th next year. He will then head to the Britannia Pier in Great Yarmouth for a show on March the 6th and King's Lynn Corn Exchange on April the 15th. The worldwide tour will see Gilligan head across the globe with crowds in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand and Singapore among those he'll perform for. He's twice sold out the O2 Arena, won three BAFTA awards and hosted the Brit Awards twice. On television, Gilligan is a long-standing judge on The Masked Singer on ITV and a regular on Celebrity Gogglebox with Babatunde Eleshe. As well as numerous Netflix stand-up specials, the star is also behind the latest show with Mo Gilligan on Channel 4, and That's My Jam on BBC One.
A developer has revealed plans for up to 150 houses in one of Norfolk's biggest villages. Badger Building has submitted papers to Great Yarmouth Borough Council in relation to its plans for the new homes at Church Farm on land north of Beccles Road in Bradwell. The developer is not yet seeking full planning permission, but has asked planners for what is called an EIA screening opinion. This will decide whether the project needs a full environmental impact assessment before it can move forward. The site is already earmarked in the Borough Council's draft site allocations document for approximately 150 houses. The application includes a transport assessment carried out on behalf of the developer, which says the site is within walking and cycling distance of existing facilities and services. According to the report, new footways would be provided to connect with existing facilities on the A143 Beccles Road. The assessment concludes that there are no highway or transportation reasons why the development proposal should not be approved. In 2019, Badger Building sought permission for up to 600 houses on the site. The homes in the latest application would further expand what is already considered one of Norfolk's fastest-growing villages. In January, the Borough Council granted planning permission for 77 houses at Meadowland Drive and 29 houses on land east of King's Drive, as well as another 28 houses on land south of Beaufort Way. The latter will form part of the expanding Bluebell Homes estate being built by Persimmon, which will ultimately include around 1,200 houses. Locals say the roads are already at capacity, while others fear health services, schools and other infrastructure will struggle to cope with the growing population.
And staying with development, a developer has been given the green light to build 49 houses in Martham Village. Dinesh Kumar Patel of Martham Properties Limited has been granted planning permission for land at Martham East Broiler Farm, a former chicken hatchery off Acacia Avenue in the village. The scheme will see two disused poultry sheds and a bungalow demolished to make way for the houses. The plans also include the redevelopment of associated public open space, drainage and infrastructure. And access to the new estate will be from the northwest corner of the site, off Acacia Avenue. Norfolk County Council Highways did not object to the plans. There were five objections from members of the public, however, with some villagers flagging concerns about the access road, the overdevelopment of the village, and the loss of agricultural land. In 2016, Great Yarmouth Borough Council granted outline permission for 55 houses on the site, but they were never built. At the time, the decision had led to fears the development could turn the village into a town. These latest plans were approved at a Borough Council Development Management Committee meeting on April the 8th.
A new restaurant is preparing to open in Caister Village. The Stack will trade from the former Spicy Papadum premises on Tan Lane in Caister, and its owners have applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council for a licence to sell alcohol from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. Few details about the venue have been released so far, but a TikTok account under the restaurant's name has been sharing videos of the refurbishment. Its tagline described the project as the creation of a brand new restaurant in the heart of the community, and says it's coming soon. Company's House lists the director of the business as Galston man Saul Antcliffe.
Back to planning now, and Caister Parish Council has objected to revised plans that would see a developer build bigger houses at a major estate in the village. Persimmon Homes is seeking permission from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to amend its plans for 665 homes on Nova Scotia Farm, west of Jack Chase Way in Caister. Outline planning permission for the site was granted in May 2023, and the developer started work on the first phase of 173 homes last year. Now the company wants to increase the size of houses across the remaining two phases, from bungalows to two-storey dwellings.
And more planning news. Neighbours have objected to a couple's bid to build a large and overbearing garage. Mr and Mrs N Bowles have applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council for planning permission to make changes to their home on Seafield Road South in Caister. They want to extend the front and rear of the house and create a new access with parking and a garage. However, their plans are facing objections. One of their neighbours has said that they are objecting specifically to the proposed garage, which would be located towards the front of the property and stand approximately 4 metres high. They have raised concerns about the sheer scale of the proposed garage, which would be dominant and overbearing. However, the neighbours have said they would withdraw their objection if the height of the garage was reduced or if it was relocated to less sensitive location. Caister Parish Council has objected to the plans on the grounds of overdevelopment. In a related planning application, the couple also want to build a new three-bed bungalow to the rear of their home, a historic farmhouse which dates to the early 19th century.
Drivers have been warned to brace themselves for disruption when £12 million worth of work to stop potholes from forming on Norfolk roads begins. Norfolk County Council's annual Spring and Summer Road Surface Dressing Programme started on Tuesday the 21st of April. The work started on Mill Lane in Flegborough and Lyons Green in Scarning, the first of 351 miles of the county's roads which are due to be treated between now and September. Surface dressing involves spraying a coating of bitumen onto the roads, followed by further layers of stone chippings. Council officials say the new seal helps stop water penetration and cuts the number of potholes which can form, whilst also extending the life of roads with new skid-resistant surfaces. Officers at Norfolk County Council say 20-mile-per-hour speed limit restrictions will be needed on freshly sealed roads for safety reasons. Graham Bygrave, Director of Highways, Transport and Waste, said, "We're treating more miles of road this year and helping to keep local routes in good condition, which is all part of our preventative maintenance strategy. Surface dressing is a practical way to reduce potholes and improve safety, and it means we can look after more of Norfolk's roads in a cost-effective way. People living along the routes being treated will receive notification a day or two before the crews arrive. They will be asked not to park on the road on the day of the surface dressing work or on the following day when surplus chippings will be swept up. And people are also urged to drive slowly and considerately across the new surface until it is bedded in and the highway teams return to sweep up any remaining loose chippings. Council officials say that is because the passage of vehicles over the new surface plays an important part in helping the surface to settle in. We look forward to that in the summer, don't we?
Six Norfolk primary schools, stretching from the suburbs of Norwich to the East Coast, have joined forces in a new federation as falling birth rates threaten the county's smaller classrooms. The City to Coast, or C2C, Primary Federation, a newly formed group of six primary schools in the Greater Great Yarmouth and Broadland areas, officially launched on April the 14th. It came into being through the merger of two pre-existing federations, the Hive Federation, made up of Thorpe St Andrews, St William's Primary School and Brundle Primary School, and Caister Primary Federation, which includes Caister Infant with Nursery, Caister Junior, Hemsby and Rollsby Primary Schools. A joint governing body for the two federations agreed in October last year to consult on forming a single enlarged federation of all six schools. This followed concerns over falling pupil numbers linked to a declining birth rate across Norfolk. Last year, Norfolk County Council officials said fewer schools would be needed because the number of children starting school will have plummeted by a third in little more than 2 years. Rollsbury Primary School, for example, had a planning admission number of just 10 pupils for 2026-27, down from 15 in 2025-26. Education bosses said trusts and governing bodies could need to consider closures, mergers, changing catchment areas, or becoming part of multi-academy trusts. The governing boards of both Caister Primary Federation and the Hive Federation met in February and voted to proceed with the proposal to merge. Under the plans, the school will keep their current names, uniforms, admissions arrangements and separate Ofsted inspections and SATs results, but share on governing board and an executive head teacher. Day-to-day running will remain the responsibility of a head of school or head teacher at each site, supported by a central services unit handling safeguarding, finance, admin, premises and IT and catering. Jonathan Rice continued as executive head teacher of the new federation. He had previously served as executive head teacher of Caister Primary Federation.
Sea shanties will fill the air in a rousing evening of maritime music and coastal pride. The Sheringham Shanty Men will perform at the Hippodrome Circus this Saturday, April the 25th, and it's part of a fundraising event organised by the Great Yarmouth and Goulston RNLI Fundraising Guild. The concert will raise funds for the work of the RNLI volunteer crew and the local lifeboat stations in Yarmouth and Goulston. A spokesman for the Hippodrome said, "With their renowned rich harmony performances and storytelling, the Shantymen will be bringing a little maritime history to the Hippodrome for this evening of entertainment, fun and community." They said the group will raise funds for the important work of the RNLI volunteer crew and the local station in Great Yarmouth and Goulston and their dedication and commitment to saving lives at sea. The event will be held in the unique Pirate Lagoon with the Hippodrome's iconic pirate ship providing a great backdrop. The Shantymen are known for their rich harmonies and storytelling, bringing maritime life to history through song, and the event starts at 7 p.m.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready, we're sailing away. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready to sail. We rise in the morning, sail out on the tide, silent we slip from the quay, with the gulls overhead and the sails alongside, proudly we head out to sea. We'll fish in the midges, fair weather or foul, living our lives on the sea. It's hard and it's tough, and the pay's not enough, but what other life can there be? It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready, we're sailing away. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready to sail. in between. Casting the nets out and hauling them in, sometimes not a fish to be seen. We'll be cold, tired, hungry and drenched to the skin as we head back to Stornoway Town. With a catch safely landed, we'll have a good tramp in the Clacken, the Lewis or the Crown. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready, we're sailing away. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready to sail. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready, we're sailing away. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, time to get ready to sail.
The Sheringham Shantymen there with a tune called 5 o'clock in the morning. Right, in this week's Grapevine Extra, we've Alison looking at St George's Day, which was Thursday the 23rd, and Andrew on the word ghost. But now it's time to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A man who proudly flew the flag of the Royal Air Force and led local commemorations of the Battle of Britain has died, aged 91. The Royal Air Forces Association, or RAFA, in Great Yarmouth, has said it is with great sadness that its branch secretary, Tom Gilbert, died at the James Paget Hospital in Goulston on March the 29th. He had been secretary of the RAFA for many years and oversaw the growth in the borough. Among the responsibilities were coordinating the Battle of Britain service in the Minster each September and organising the association's participation in the annual Armed Forces Day. He also ensured that RAFA was flying the flag every August at the Clifftop Festival in Goulston. Every month, he arranged a stimulating and entertaining programme of monthly meetings for members. Jackie Boys, secretary of RAFA in Great Yarmouth, said, "Welfare of members was always crucial to Tom, as was encouraging anyone with an RAF background to come along to meetings." Mr. Gilbert joined the RAF from September 1952 until 1957. He served in Singapore in air traffic control during the Malayan Emergency, a guerrilla war between pro-independence fighters and the forces of the British Empire. Mr. Boyce said his commitment to RAFA was total, and he will be sadly missed by all the committee and members. His funeral will take place in Great Yarmouth Minster on Wednesday, April the 29th, at 1:30 p.m, followed by a committal at the crematorium in Goulston. The Royal Air Forces Association, also known as RAF Association or RAFA, is a British registered charity. It provides care and support to serving and retired members of the Air Forces of the British Commonwealth and to their dependents.
Two stories now about employment. And unemployment unexpectedly fell in the UK over the 3 months to February before the outbreak of the latest Middle East conflict. The rate of unemployment dropped to 4.9%, down from 5.2% in the previous 3 months, according to figures from the Office for National Statistics. Joblessness in the UK is now at its lowest level since last summer. But businesses in the East fear unemployment could rise again in the coming months once firms feel the full impact of the Iran war, with soaring energy and fuel prices, business rate rises and the jump in employment costs. Candy Richards, the Federation of Small Businesses Regional Manager for East Anglian, said, "It does not reflect the current challenging climate in which small businesses are operating. Many firms across a wide range of sectors are signalling a slowdown as business and consumer confidence wanes while costs rise exponentially," she warned. Concerningly, March's insolvency figures show an increase in the number of insolvent businesses, a trend that could continue if the government does not provide quick and proportional support for small businesses to reduce costs and taxes. With the outlook for the economy looking as ambiguous as ever, future unemployment rates will be highly dependent on the government putting words into action and backing small businesses as they try to get through this prolonged period of uncertainty. The percentage of people who are unemployed and not looking for a job, known as economically inactive, rose to 21% in the 3 months to February, up from 20.7% in the 3 months before.
Tech-savvy youngsters are not workplace-ready, despite being digitally confident, employers have warned. Businesses in Norfolk and Suffolk say too many young people lack the skills and confidence required by employers, according to a new analysis of local skills improvement plans, or LSIPs, published by the British Chambers of Commerce. The report comes as the number of young people not in employment, education or training in the UK has risen to 957,000, the highest level since the 2008 financial crisis, with 12.8% of 18 to 24-year-olds now out of work and learning. Work readiness is now a very high concern for East Anglia's employers, who say digitally confident does not mean workplace ready, with many youngsters lacking practical and communication skills. This is despite almost a third of bosses, or 30%, citing AI awareness as desirable. In rural areas of the region, transport and connectivity are also proving to be barriers for young people entering the jobs market, limiting their access to jobs, training and work experience. Dean Pierpoint is the Skills Director for the Norfolk and Suffolk LSIP, which works in collaboration with employers, Norfolk and Suffolk Chambers of Commerce and the Department of Education to highlight the skills requirements for key sectors across the region. Too many young people are still leaving education without a clear route into work, and employers are feeling that gap, he said. Kate Shoesmith, Director of Policy at the British Chambers of Commerce, said LSIPs are being held back by a lack of careers advice available to schools. Many LSIPs report that schools are not aware of the growth areas in their local economies or the breadth of careers available, she said. With almost 1 million young people not in employment, education or training, earlier intervention is essential to connect young people to the world of work. The tools to do this already exist through LSIPs. It is now a matter of giving them the long-term support and authority to deliver at scale.
A chicken factory worker has been banned from getting behind a wheel after driving while 3 times over the legal alcohol limit. Emantas Karousas, age 40, has been disqualified from driving for 4 years after he drove his Audi in Great Yarmouth while under the influence of alcohol. A court heard he had been drinking before he got in his car as it was the second anniversary of his partner's death. Appearing at Great Yarmouth Magistrate Court, he pleaded guilty to driving on Howard Street North on March the 29th while inebriated. Prosecuting, Ellen Connolly said, police received a report from a member of the public who was following an Audi on the A47. The vehicle was reported to be swerving across the road and was followed onto the retail park. Once the vehicle was stopped by the police, they could immediately smell intoxicating liquor. A roadside breath test gave 110 micrograms of alcohol in 100 millilitres of breath, more than 3 times the legal limit of 35 micrograms. A second test in custody recorded a reading of 105 micrograms of alcohol in 100 millilitres of breath. Anne Baker, mitigating, said, he says he stopped drinking about 4 years ago. The reason he drank on this occasion was that it was the second anniversary of his partner's death. Karousas of Springfield Road in Goulston must complete 200 hours of unpaid work and also pay a victim surcharge of £114 and prosecution costs of £85.
An arsonist must pay more than £400 in compensation after damaging a neighbouring fence in a blaze and attempting to destroy a fire extinguisher. Harry Newby, aged 34, set his own caravan alight at Jubilee Farm near Great Yarmouth on August 10, 2025, The fire also damaged neighbouring fenced panels. Appearing at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court, he pleaded guilty to committing arson and also attempting to destroy a fire extinguisher belonging to the Windmill Care Home in Rollesby. Prosecuting, Ellen Connolly said, a fire occurred at Jubilee Farm. The fire originated from the caravan belonging to the defendant. CCTV showed the defendant setting his own property alight. The fire caused damage to the neighbouring fence panels. On the same day, he removed and discharged a fire extinguisher. Defending, Anne Baker said, this was not an intentional act. He just had no idea that the fire would have gone as far as the fences. With regards to the extinguisher, he had removed a fire extinguisher and started spraying it, but there was nobody there. Newby, of Beach Road in Caister, was sentenced to a conditional discharge for 6 months. He must pay £400 in compensation to the victim whose fence panels he damaged. He must also pay £75 to the care home and a victim surcharge of £26.
And three people have appeared in court accused of crack cocaine dealing following a police raid in Great Yarmouth. Dramatic video footage captures the moment police smashed down the door of a property on Louise Close. Officers who raided the second floor flat on April the 20th seized a quantity of drugs and weapons following a search. A 20-year-old man and two Yarmouth teenagers who were arrested have subsequently been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine. All three were remanded in custody until they appeared before Norwich Magistrates Court. Leighton Blaze, aged 20, of Eastwood Road, Lee-on-Sea in Essex, was also wanted in connection with an incident on the Greenstead Estate in Colchester on April the 8th, when a man in his 20s was assaulted. The victim suffered a stab wound to his leg and was taken to hospital. Detectives had released images of two men over the attack. Blaze is charged with GBH with intent, possession of an offensive weapon, and failing to appear at court. He did not enter pleas to any of the charges and was remanded to prison until an appearance at Ipswich Crown Court on May the 20th. Nicola Lamb, prosecuting, said he was accused of a very serious offence, including a significant role in drug supply that carried a starting point of 4.5 years in prison. A 17-year-old boy is charged with possession with intent to supply crack cocaine and another boy aged 16 with the same offence and possession of a knife in a private place. Both youngsters, who cannot be named for legal reasons, will appear at Norwich Crown Court on May the 20th. They were given bail with conditions including curfews, not to contact co-defendants or witnesses, and a ban on having any mobile phone except those supplied by council's children's services. A fourth suspect, a boy in his teens, was arrested on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine. He has been released on bail until July the 20th.
Councillors will consider a shopkeeper's bid to sell alcohol at a shop which lost its licence after underage teenagers were served vodka. Muthia Gananavel has applied for permission to sell alcohol at Express Store and Post Office on St Peter's Road. The application was due to be discussed by Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Licensing Subcommittee on Thursday, April the 23rd. The shop is seeking approval to sell alcohol for consumption off the premises 24 hours a day, as well as provide late-night refreshment between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. daily. Documents published on the council's website show that the police licensing team proposed a condition to be added to the licence, forbidding the sale of single cans or bottles of alcohol at the shop. The applicant agreed to the inclusion of the condition. As a result, the police licensing team has no objection to the application. The Borough Council revoked the shop's previous licence last year, following complaints from parents that children as young as 13 had become unwell after drinking alcohol bought from the store.
CJ Opticians, a provider of eye care on Baker Street in Goulston, has taken over Morse Opticians on Tan Lane in Caister after the owners retired. Managing Director Claire Pugh said, "We're incredibly proud of the success we've seen in Goulston and felt it was the perfect time to bring our brand of friendly, expert care to Caister. And we look forward to welcoming past, present and brand new customers to our family." Other new members of the team include Dispensing Optician Director John Peterson and Optometrist Director Richard Pugh. In addition to traditional optical services, The practice will also offer a dedicated earwax removal service under the Clearer Ears name. And the practice is now accepting appointments and can be contacted on 01493 802229 or via email at info@cj-opticians.com. CJ Opticians offer a full range of services including eye exams, contact lens fitting and a selection of designer eyewear with prices starting from only £25.
5 men have been arrested following reports of rogue trading in Great Yarmouth. The men, aged in their 20s, 30s and 40s, were arrested on Tuesday afternoon on suspicion of fraud by false representation. The arrests follow an incident on Monday where a group of men approached an address and told the elderly homeowner that her home required gutter cleaning, roof repairs and gardening. They then charged her several £1,000, taking her to the bank to collect the cash, and returned to the address the following day to collect more money. The suspects were taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning, where they remain. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "Doorstep rogue traders pretend to be builders, gardeners or handymen offering to carry out work or so-called urgent repairs to your house or garden. The work is often poor, unnecessary and the price quoted can increase rapidly. Our advice is, if you have any doubt, keep them out. You should never agree to buy goods from or have work done by someone who calls unannounced at your door or approaches you on the street. Officers are urging that if people feel pressurised or threatened by traders, they should go inside, stay inside and ring 999.
And a full day of live music is set to bring people together in Great Yarmouth while supporting a much-loved theatre. St George's Theatre will host a special fundraising music festival on May the 23rd, which will run from 2pm until 11pm. The event will feature more than 10 bands and singers in a bid to fill the theatre with energy, talent and community spirit. Ticket holders will receive a wristband allowing them to come and go freely during the event. Both seated and standing tickets will be available for people who want to relax or dance. The full lineup of performers will be announced shortly, with a mix of familiar acts and new artists. The festival is being held as a vital fundraiser to help keep St George's Theatre running, with money from ticket sales going directly towards preserving the historic building. A spokesman for the theatre said, "Thank you for helping us keep the doors open, the lights on and the stage alive."
The world's oldest love letter, written in English, tells of a Norfolk woman's dilemma between her heart and money more than 500 years ago. When Marjorie Brews wrote to her fiancé, John Paston, in February 1477, she broke the news that her father would not increase the dowry she would bring with her to wedlock. But she assured him that she would love him all the same, even if the start of their married life was not as comfortable as they might have hoped. Now, a fresh translation generated by a new artificial intelligence, or AI, tool has shone new light on the lover's plight 5 centuries later. Researchers from the online family history platform MyHeritage fed the missive into a new AI tool it has developed called Scribe. It was written in long-defunct late Middle English that had extra characters which are no longer used. They found it could quickly get to grips with the language Miss Brews uses to lay her emotions bare, with personal flourishes and inconsistent spellings. MyHeritage said the language can feel unfamiliar to modern readers because spelling, grammar and pronunciation were very different from the English we use now. Miss Brews tells her fiancé that she has a full heavy heart, as her mother has failed to persuade her father to increase her dowry. Beseeching him to keep the matter private, she reassures John that her heart loves him above all earthly things, promising she would not abandon him, even if he ends up with a smaller estate or less money than he had hoped. The couple were married soon after she sent the letter and went on to have a son, William, in 1479. According to AI, the letter was written in Topcroft, near Bungay, in February 1477, which was later annotated as February 1476-77. It is part of the Paston collection of hundreds of family papers spanning the 15th and 16th centuries. The collection charts the rise of the family from the village of the same name near North Walsham from medieval peasants to become wealthy landowners, merchants and lawyers based around Caister and Great Yarmouth. Some were published for the first time in the late 18th century, including Marjorie Bruce's letter. They were later edited by scholar James Gairdner between 1872 and 1904, who could never have imagined the modern-day technology which would accomplish the same task in minutes.
Well, that's all the news for this week, so it's welcome to Grapevine Extra. And in Extra this week, Andrew will be telling us why the word ghost has an H in it. After, Alison gives us a brief history of England's patron saint and mythical dragon slayer.
Today, the 23rd of April, is St George's Day. St George, as listeners will know, is the patron saint of England. This may not have much significance for our everyday life, but it's interesting, nevertheless, to find out something about this rather unknown character. It's impossible to be sure about the details of the life of someone who lived as long ago as the 3rd century AD. But one thing does seem to be certain: George wasn't English, but is thought to have been a Greek-speaking Christian who lived in the Roman Empire, and whose tomb is in the modern-day city of Lod in Israel. Many of us grew up hearing the legend that George was a heroic knight, but it appears more likely that he was an officer in the Roman army. He did, however, die for his Christian faith in AD 303, during a persecution by the Emperor Diocletian, so he was commemorated as St George the Martyr. Apparently George never came to England, but his reputation for virtue and holiness spread across Europe. His feast day, the 23rd of April, was celebrated in England from the 8th century. King Edward I, who reigned from 1272 to 1307, was the first English king to show an interest in St George, and his army carried banners with a red cross on a white background, the emblem of the saint. It is said that King Edward III, who reigned 1327 to 1377, who was involved in the Crusades, owned a relic of St George's blood. After the Battle of Agincourt, won by King Henry V in 1415, St George's Day became one of the most important feast days in our calendar. And what about the dragon? The story goes that St George freed the town of Cyllene in Libya from a human-eating dragon, but this heroic detail was apparently first linked to George only some 500 years after his death. The story could just have been an allegory representing the triumph of good against evil, but it became popular and has stuck to the legend of St George. During the Middle Ages, people invoked the help of St George for many problems, such as curing diseases, including the plague, and in fighting battles. Even during the First World War, it is said that British troops retreating from Mons in Belgium were helped when they saw an apparition of St George. Indeed, many First World War memorials are engraved with an image of him. The St George's Cross appears on the badge of the Order of the Garter, which was founded in 1348, and the George Cross, created by King George VI in 1940 for courage in danger, shows the image of George defeating the dragon. Such a well-known figure as St George is celebrated not just in England, but in many other parts of the world, such as Ethiopia, Portugal, Venice, Genoa and Catalonia, where he's also the patron saint. And even in Great Yarmouth, there is St George's Road, no doubt one of many streets across the country bearing his name.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job, slay him. You call me, Chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Sid, you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah, you were right.
I was right?
Yeah, it was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you were almost devoured by the man. Is that right, Dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He baned me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him. Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah? So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard there was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I've seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you've seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and, like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just a run-the-mill dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3:05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was a dragon.
I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new 45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
You'd slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting. Let's go.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted. His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked. Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
American satirical comedian there, Stan Freberg, with his Mickey take on the old Dragnet TV series from the 1950s. Does anyone remember that? It was number one in America, but didn't enter the UK charts, although he did have other titles which did. It was released here, definitely, as I was given a copy back in the late 50s when relatives were getting rid of their 78s. I'd accept any records going back then. Hey-ho. OK, it's over to Andrew for a mini English lesson.
Moving on to the 24th. Now, April the 24th is St. Mark's Eve. St. Mark's Eve is a night when it is believed the ghosts of those who will die in the coming year can be seen gliding through the doors of the church. The superstition is first recorded in the 17th century, but probably goes back much further, to the times when death loomed large in the imagination, thanks to plagues such as the Black Death. Such spectral incarnations of a living being are known as wraiths or fetches, and a fetch life was the term for a supposed messenger of death sent to collect a living person. Both terms are listed as synonyms for ghost in the dictionary, but ghost itself is a word with a fittingly invisible story to tell, and it involves a different kind of ghoul to those appearing on St. Mark's Eve, though for some just as grisly. The silent H in the word ghost is the result of a historical hiccup dating back 5 centuries. The pioneering printer William Caxton, having learned his trade in Flanders, returned to England with a team of experienced Flemish typesetters for his new press. It was they, or more likely a single individual, who decided that the old English ghost, G-O-S-T, looked all wrong. As their native Flemish was geest, G-H-E-E-S-T, they lobbed in an H to make it more familiar. And a ricochet effect meant also that aghast and ghastly each inherited an extra letter too. All the result of a single decision by one hand half a millennium ago.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Desney and Margaret, so we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe and well. The forecast for the week ahead is not looking too bad. So, from all your friends at Grapevine, have a good week, and as usual, it's bye for now.